Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court. It's our position that this statement that James Summers made, sua sponte, not in response to any questioning or any prompting by the defendant, clearly was impermissible, and it was improper prejudicial. And based upon the case law that we've got here, it sort of alluded to that he had been previously...
Were you the lawyer at the trial? Were you his lawyer at trial?
No, I wasn't, Your Honor.
Well, whoever was, why did he ask Summers about Zitt? I don't understand. What was that about?
I don't know. All I know is that it was a closed question. It was a question that simply called for a yes or no
question. What was the point of the question?
I think it was simply to see if they had any knowledge of each other.
Well, why? What's that about?
I can't tell you, Your Honor.
But if he asks a dumb question and gets an answer he doesn't like, he's stuck.
Well, except for the fact that the question was simply, did Mr. Zitt know that you'd gone to jail for that year? That's a simple yes or no.
No, but if you answer and you say, of course I know, I was in the same jail with him, that's a perfectly natural answer. If you ask an open-ended question, you get an open-ended answer.
But it wasn't an open-ended question, Your Honor. It called for yes or no.
But what I just said to you is a very natural answer to that question.
But I don't think that the defense counsel...
You don't reverse a conviction for that because his lawyer asked a dumb question.
Well...
Let him go after his lawyer.
Well, that's probably something that would happen later on.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to work.
Should I continue?
A waste of time. Not yet. Continue, sure.
Okay. I'm going to simply indicate that it was improperly and prejudicial. Our position is that it was a yes or no question. It simply did not call for the answer. It applied to something that had happened 2005, which was the conviction out of Michigan. And based upon the case law we've got here, it was improperly brought to the evidence that he'd been previously...
So every time an answer is given to a question by the defendant's lawyer and he doesn't like the answer, you get a new trial?
Well, no, but I think when the defendant or the person answering the question sua sponte blurts out something that is not responsive to that question...
It is responsive.
Well, I think he's
a perfectly appropriate answer.
It was cross-examination, so it was leading. I can't see why Mr.
So let's look at the exact question, because it says, and when you got the year in jail for fleeing and the check deception, you'd already known Zitt at the time, correct? Yes. I mean, he should have stopped there. But his next question was, Mr. Zitt knew that you had gone to jail for that year or so.
Correct.
And he says, I was in prison while he was locked up. When you say knew, Mr. Zitt knew, people can interpret that in different ways. How did they know? You know, so it can suggest giving an explanation.
I understand
you're saying it's a yes or no, but...
But it doesn't call for he knew I was locked up because...
But it calls for him to talk about Zitt's knowledge when you say Mr. Zitt knew.
So it would be yes or no. Yes,
yeah,
he knew.
But how he knows what Zitt knew.
Well, that would be a follow-up question.
Not necessarily. That's all I'm saying. It's not as tight as you think it is to say Zitt knew.
Okay.
To say Zitt knew goes into the knowledge in the witness's head as to what was going on with Zitt. That's all I'm saying. It's not as tight as you think.
Okay. Our position is it didn't open the door contrary to the trial court. It didn't open. And the trial court sort of admitted, look, if you want me to, I'll bring it up. It's due to some sort of admonishment, but I don't think you ought to, because I think it's going to call attention.
That was what the trial court did once he realized this information came out. It shouldn't have come out. It was improper to come out. So the district judge is trying to clean it up. The trial counsel should have just stopped at the question before. Never would have gotten in this problem.
Right. But I don't think he anticipated that he would sort of blurt out the sua sponte because it was a simple yes or no. Did you know? Yes. No. And then it would follow up. I think that...
No, it was Mr. Zitt knew.
Right.
Mr. Zitt knew.
Did Mr. Zitt know?
This is Summers on the stand. He's asking him what Zitt knew. It's one thing to say, and you knew he was in jail. I mean, and you knew he had gone. I'm going to withdraw it. It's just not as clear as you think.
Okay. Well, our position is it simply called for a yes or no question, and it shouldn't have been allowed. It was improperly prejudicial. I think the case that I submitted is clearly on point. that it was a prior conviction goes to that sort of issue, and the case law is simply that it was improper. It was something the jury considered.
It's automatically reversible error, though.
It's not, but I think in the context of this case, I think it should be reversible error. I think it was, and the case law is pretty clear that it's sort of prior crime. It's something that's...
You think it's a close case?
I think it's a case that should go in favor of Mr. Zitt. I think that the case law submitted...
Is it a close case that he would likely have been acquitted if this question hadn't been answered this way?
I think it's a close case. I think the witnesses that were there had severe baggage. The lay witnesses had prior records. Some of them had filed felonies for forgery, fraud. They all had deals. The USA said, I'll contact the law enforcement.
That, of course, is standard, right?
That is standard, but it still goes to that issue. I'll save my time for rebuttal here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Cremins.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Emily Cremins on behalf of the United States. To address your question about the purpose of defense counsel's question to Mr. Summers, I believe what defense counsel was getting at was that during Mr. Summers' direct examination, there were questions that by the government that elicited the fact that, you know, Mr. Summers had somewhat of a close relationship with Mr. Zitt, and then Mr. Summers went to jail, and after that time, he was no longer personally involved with Mr. Zitt. That Mr. Zitt was paranoid, and he was very cautious about who he dealt with and who he worked with, and so that the aspect of Mr. Zitt's knowledge perhaps was going, or defense counsel's question about Mr. Zitt's knowledge was going to go to the fact that after Mr. Summers was in prison, Mr. Zitt no longer directly dealt with Mr. Summers, that he always used an intermediary or a middleman. To get to the issue of this case, the government argues that the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion for a mistrial. The district court at the time that the improper evidence was given, I guess, it dismissed or excused the jury and allowed defense counsel to make his motion out of the presence of the jury and gave defense counsel options for what could be done instead of granting a mistrial. That was well within the district court's discretion to give those options. And then when defense counsel, you know, refused those options and said it was either, you know, that they were requesting only a mistrial, it was well within the district court's discretion to realize that given the evidence that had come in at this point, which included testimony from two individuals who had purchased heroin from Mr. Zitt. One of those individuals purchased between $2,000 and $5,000 worth of heroin in just the span of a few days. The other witness had made one of the trips to Chicago to obtain heroin for the defendant. The jury had heard from an alleged co-conspirator of Mr. Zitt's who was involved not only with purchasing heroin from him but also distributing it to others on Mr. Zitt's behalf, and who had also been to Chicago to obtain heroin.
Would it be proper for a judge to say to the jury, you heard Mr. Summers testify that he knew whatever it was he knew that Mr. Zitt was in jail because he was in jail, he was in the same jail or whatever exactly he said. Would it be proper for the judge to say, okay, you heard this, but actually when he said he was in jail, that Zitt was in jail, or he was in, or implied that he was in jail, that was just a mistake?
Meaning, I guess my question back to the court would be, meaning that it was a mistake that they were not in jail at the same time, or meaning that answer was a mistake?
That the answer was a mistake, that they weren't, he wasn't in jail.
Certainly. The district court could have given, right, yes, a limiting instruction that they were to disregard it.
No, that's not a limiting instruction. No. What I'm saying is, is it proper for a judge to lie to the jury in order to eliminate the mistaken testimony? Just say to the jury, yeah, you heard that he said Mr. Zitt was in jail, or he was in the same jail with Mr. Zitt, but no... That was just a mistake. So ignore that. Ignore it because it's a mistake. not ignore it because I'm telling you, you know, don't think about a pink elephant, right? Because we know that that is hard to follow.
Right. Well,
is that ever done by judges?
I certainly haven't seen it done, and I believe that would be possibly inappropriate because the judge would be commenting on the evidence, and so perhaps
his prior jail record is irrelevant, right? So he's not commenting on the evidence. He is telling a falsehood in order to purge improper evidence from the case, so the jury will not be thinking about the fact that he has a criminal record, right?
Perhaps, Your Honor, the best solution, kind of looking back in hindsight, would be to say that to tell the jury that that testimony was irrelevant.
No. No, you don't
understand.
You tell the jury something is irrelevant, they're going to think, wow, that must be really important, right? Why is he telling me it's irrelevant? Well, I have to think about that. That's the problem with objections, right? Objection is sustained. Jury thinks, well, wait a second. What is it that's being kept from us? That's one of the reasons why lawyers don't routinely object. Right? Because
yes.
They don't want to create that impression with the jury of hiding things.
Yes.
So all these limiting instructions and this or that, they're probably ineffectual, right? And so it seems to me the sensible solution, although it's dishonest, would be just to tell the jury this testimony I just heard was mistaken. Someone made a mistake. So ignore it because it was a mistake. Right?
That's certainly, I guess... Could be an option.
That, I would think. Yeah.
Well, so that's a possibility. Is your position that would have some impact on the credibility of the witness on the stand? The court would just have to be careful about how it's phrased.
That's a good
correct.
Question.
Correct. Correct. And then here's the other thing. I know that the government admonished the witness before not to go into the record, criminal record.
Correct.
So just a practice tip, I mean, because I was a district judge for many years, I always ask counsel, is there anything that the witness should not get into? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then before the witness hit the stand and with the jury outside, I would discuss it with the witness and say, you understand you're not supposed to go into his record or anything.
Correct.
Are you following me? Yes. If there's any question that you're asked and to answer it honestly, you have to refer to this conviction. Will you ask for a sidebar? I actually have witnesses do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that avoids the whole problem. I just suggest that to you as a practice point, because then you have a record. There's never a dispute whether the prosecutor told somebody not to go into it. It's on the record. The judge gets to eyeball the witness and make sure the witness, like, gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter what the educational level of the witness is. The judge gets that. And then witnesses will do it. And it happened to me several times. It was very easy. They would just say, Judge, can we have a sidebar? I would say, fine. Everybody would leave. I'd say, what's the problem? They say, if I answer this question, then I have to go into whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then the counsel could then ask a different question, and we could just pass that on as a technique you might want to
consider.
Okay,
thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
But trying to undo it by countenancing the judge lying.
Yeah, it's not.
May not be too good on appeal.
Correct. No. Yes, we don't want to ask the judge to lie. Perhaps on our behalf. But the government would believe that, you know, looking at the record as a whole and what the district court had seen, which in its position, which this court recognizes that the district court is in a superior position in these situations to determine the sufficiency or the strength of the event and then whether or not it warrants a mistrial, that here the district court acted well within its discretion, given that this was perhaps brief reference to Mr. Zitt being locked up, and there was no further mention of it. There was no further import put on this statement, and given the strength of the other evidence that was presented against Mr. Zitt. And I would like to take a moment to apologize to the court. As opposing counsel noted, I violated Circuit Rule 32.1D in citing a case that was unpublished and issued before 2007. I apologize for that. It was part of a string site that had published cases that are properly before this court. I would ask the court to consider those and just disregard my mistake.
Depends on who the author was.
I have the case with me. I could tell you, Your Honor.
Never mind.
But other than that, the government would ask that this court affirm the district court's denial of the motion to dismiss. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cremins. So, Mr. Rosen?
Briefly, Your Honor.
Further?
Yes.
I think the trial counsel, the appellate counsel, is sort of minimizing this by saying it was a brief reference. That's not the issue. The issue is it was improper, it was impermissible.
No, the impact is a very important issue.
Correct, but in the case law that we've got here, the evidence of prior conviction of a crime.
This is not automatic. This is not an automatically reversible error.
I agree.
The briefer it is. I mean, it's not as if he said, yeah, we were both locked up. He was in there for child molestation and burning down churches and so on. No, it wasn't that.
No, I agree. I totally agree that it wasn't that, but it still alluded to that he'd been previously convicted of a crime when he hadn't even testified and that hadn't been allowed to be come in. And defense counsel was right at that. It's still important. The trial court never said, you know, this is minimal. What you said was, if you want, we will, you know, do some sort of limiting instruction, but I don't think you want to do that because it will call attention. And the trial counsel made a very smart decision saying, you're right, but we still want the mistrial because it still came out. I think for appellate counsel to sit there and say, well, that's
really arguing that any mention, any mistake in this area is automatically reversible error. No inquiry into prejudice or, you know, impact or anything.
Well, I think when you look at the totality of the...
Even in a case where the lawyer asked a dumb question.
That goes to the issue that I think the question that he intended to call and he asked was a yes or no question that Summers sort of blurted out something that really wasn't called for. And I think we can go back into that. But the fact is, when you read it, did you know... Yes or no? Did you know? And I think that's what his intention was in cross-examination. I suppose he could have worded that the whole, you know, you did know this or something, but he still said, did you know, which is, you know, some jurisdictions have called leading. But that's where it is.
And on the flip side of the practice tip, as a defense counsel, if there's areas a government witness is not supposed to get into, you should ask for such an instruction by the judge before the witness hits the stand. That
spirit.
Helps you too.
Yes, Your Honor,
go
most
ahead.
Definitely. And I think that this counsel's position about how these witnesses went and they did trips, there's never any evidence that Mr. Zitt ever went to Chicago on any of these trips. The witnesses were high, and I've talked about they all had deals. They were all very dirty witnesses who all had come to court, who contacted them because they had pending cases they wanted to get resolved. They were co-conspirators, had plea agreements. They got serious reductions. One went from a 20-year mandatory minimum to a 5-year mandatory minimum and understood that he's going to
move. And that was all before the jury, right?
It was all before the jury, but I think for the government to come and say, oh, it was so close, such an open and shut case, I think that's not entirely accurate. I don't think that's accurate at all. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Were you appointed, Mr. Rosen? Pardon?
I was.
Yes, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Ms. Cremins for efforts on behalf of her client.